This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees podcast and I mix what I like.org. Your homeboys from knee high, and even when it was storming outside, that's me, dog, on my block. I ain't had to play the big shot. Knew me back when I was stealing beer from Shamrock, and my nickname was Creepy. Black Joe could see me, he'd be tripping. I bet he still try to tease me. Current state of hip hop.
I feel like we losing it. You know what I'm saying? I feel like the people that are in control of what hip hop does is so white and so Jewish until they don't give a about what the culture and the craft and what it really is about. I don't know if the motherfuckers trying to really, let me say this right, because I want this to be as offensive as I can make it for these old punks that's running these record labels. You know, that's in the powerful positions to dictate what the black community hears and listens to. You know what I mean? I hate that shit. Like, that shit pisses me off. Like, there's no way that you can tell me that it's not a conspiracy against the blacks in hip hop. Because you put out records that make us look stupid. You make us look dumb. You brainwash a generation. You brainwash a generation of hip hoppers with this crud. And then when these other rappers come out, splitting it down the middle, these other rappers sound like, wow, y'all look great. Y'all look stupid. Y'all look great. Y'all look stupid. Y'all look great. And then, you know, start going over here, and then pretty soon, you know, hip hop is white now. I'm from the ghetto, so I'm used to that. Look on your map and find Texas and see where you today. It's on the borderline of hard times, and it's seldom that you hear praying and giving God time. That's why I ask my mind to pray for me, because I know that even I got to die, and he got a day for me. And every morning I wake up, I'm kind of glad to be alive, because thousands of my homeboys die. You've seen it from an artist side, and you're also the president at Def Jam South, so you've seen it from both sides. Do you have any advice for upcoming artists as far as like... Man, all I can say to the upcoming artists, man, the advice that I have for them is to respect the craft, uphold the integrity of the craft, man. Don't... You know what I mean? Don't let these people dictate what we hear, you know, or dictate what we see, you know, in hip hop. You know, it's our culture. Like, stay the fuck out of it. You know what I mean? Like, this is our shit. And I just feel fucked up when a old 75-year-old dude that ain't never been to the neighborhood to embrace this culture or ever. To try to dictate what's hot, you know, and what's not. Like that's what I want the youngsters to do, man. Protect the integrity of the craft. That way we can maintain, you know, where it's supposed to be. Because without that, you know, like I say, in 25 years, you know, hip hop will have a new face and a new hero. You know, like rock and roll got a new face and a new hero. You feel me? Like let's save and preserve this shit. Otherwise, Elvis gonna be, you know, the face on hip hop.
Right.
Seriously. Because that shit means everything, man. It really does. You know, you saw hip hop, well, you didn't see rock and roll get changed because you wasn't here and I wasn't here. But the only reason why I know that it's happening like that is because I got people that was in the music business back then. Johnny Nash is my cousin, you know, and all my bands I grew up in, and they said that, you know, rock and roll used to be, that was some shit that Chuck Berry came up with, you know, and the rock and rollers don't know who the Chuck Berry is now, you know, the blues was Robert Johnson and you know, Eddie's son House, you know what I'm saying, now the blues is Eric Clapton. You know, Mick Jagger, you know what I'm saying? That's not the blues, B, you feel me? Like, hip-hop is gonna be the same thing.
So joining us now for a discussion of the recent comments by legendary rapper Scarface that there is too much white and Jewish control of hip hop is Paul Porter. Paul Porter has served as a program director and talent for BET, consulted for AOL Music, the NBA, and Sound Exchange, and negotiated licensing deals with and has been featured on many media outlets most are familiar with and who need no further mention from me here. Porter is regarded as a music rights activist and is also on the advisory board of the Parents Television Council. He has even been summoned to testify before Congress. You can learn more about Paul Porter, Rap Rehab, and more by checking him out at raprehab.com. Paul Porter, thanks again for joining us.
Hey, man, my pleasure, man.
So, you know, we've just aired some edited segments of Scarface's comments, and let's just start from the top. How right or wrong is he that there's too much white and Jewish control over hip-hop?
Well, I mean, it's white and Jewish control of all of media, so he's on point. I mean, that hasn't changed. The music industry is, you know, led by people that don't look like the product and aren't sensitive to the product. And, you know, I've been preaching this to the choir for over a decade now, and nobody gets what happens behind the scenes because they're great at hiding it. Who's leading who? You know, we don't talk about Lee or Cohen. We don't talk about Doug Morris or Jimmy Iovine or, you know, Barry Levine, or we just don't talk about who the decision makers and the folks are making the big bucks.
Yeah, you mentioned some of them, Jimmy Iovine at Interscope Records. I'm looking also, Barry Weiss is the CEO of Def Jam.
Monty and Avery Lipman are over at Universal Records. They're the ones that, you know, basically run everything that happens with Cash Money.
Right, right. And Doug Morris is the CEO of Sony Music. Though it's a Stephen Cooper who's the CEO of Warner Music, which doesn't to me strike me as a particularly Jewish name, his parent company at Access Industries is Leo Blavatnik, who is indeed a Soviet-born Ukrainian Jew. So it really isn't a question of whether or not there is, an overrepresentation of Jews, and specifically and more broadly, of course, speaking, white people at the top of these organizations. But one question I did want to ask you to expand on for our audience is, when Scarface makes these claims that it's this leadership that corrupts the art, that controls the art, how exactly does that work? I mean, when somebody, you know, because a lot of people are going to say, well, nobody makes these artists do these songs. You know, Scarface said that they put out music that makes us look dumb. And as you said, have no relationship no close relationship to the communities that produce this music. But how exactly does that work? Because, again, a lot of people are going to say, you know, come on, man, you know, nobody's making them sing these songs. Nobody's making them do this, that, and a third. How is it that you describe how this control actually plays out?
Well, I mean, there's directives from A&R of what themes they want. And you can always find somebody to do a track. It's not like, look, let's be real, man. A lot of these commercial artists really aren't that talented. It's more like a production house where they just change the names and faces of, you know, 80% of the artists, and there's, you know, 2 out of every 20 that last for more than 4 or 5 years. So in terms of content, they're going to direct what they want. You know, we've been stuck in this gangster rap mode now for almost 20 years. And, you know, at one time it was popular, but when you look at numbers, and I study numbers, it's been declining in the suburbs, it's been declining in the hood. But I also think that, you know, people of color can do a better job of rejecting this. But, you know, it's like programming music to sheep, man. If somebody's leading the herd and, you know, the station is Power 99, you know, folks just think it's black and they follow along and really don't know what's going on.
You know, as I've been talking about for years, it's through you and people like Lisa Fagers at Industry Ears and other people that you all have worked with that I've learned over the years about this issue of sales and promotion and spins in particular. And when you look at the top spins on radio and in video around the country and the songs that get picked up for commercials or to be part of video games, there is a process behind that that could speak a little bit more also to how this control does in fact play out, how it is indeed mechanized. So
the process is like everything American. Money equals power. So, you know, the major record labels have the money to market it, promote it, and to feed the hands that deliver it to you. They control the messengers in terms of, you know, programming companies. It's always been a great marriage between radio and records. And I don't care what anybody says, that it's still really important to have radio in the commercial outlets. Yes, there's an underground market. Yes, you can reach a lot of folks. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago when the MTV, VMAs were on, you know, they got 10 million people watching. You know, a month and a half before that, the BET Awards got 7 million people and another couple million on the reruns. So, you know, commercial outlets still control most of the media and most of the people, and the repetition that's this increase, and that happens because pay for play is still alive. You know, I've talked, payola's been around forever, where, you know, broadcasters and programmers get paid under the table cash or benefits or contracts or certain things to play certain product numerous times. And the repetition has increased. The variety has decreased. So it's a whole lot easier. If, you know, if Hot 97 in New York plays, you know, ASAP Rocky 101 times in a 7-day period, well, it's going to garner some attention. It's going to garner interest and likes, and other people are going to follow along. But that same type record 10 years ago, instead of getting 100 spins, would have had 40 spins. So, you know, they just force feed you. It's like, it's incredible when you know what goes on inside the system. But who can talk about the system except on a show like this?
Part of this is also one of the lesser discussed topics when people, get into the arena of popular culture or media. Everybody whispers it. Everybody talks about it under the table that this issue of Jews control the media and Jews control this, that, and a third. There isn't much discussion of any of even the competing histories as to why that is, whichever preferred history that explains it. But, you know, I think it's undeniable that it is that case in terms of the positions of leadership and power in these in particularly in the media industry, and in particularly specifically as we're dealing with this issue of hip hop. But if there is this history that is often told and discussed, that Jews escaping oppression in Eastern Europe come to this country and are shut out of all the major industries, leaving them few avenues, which would include Hollywood and eventually the music industry. And this is part of this sort of very, what we're always just, you know, encouraged to believe is this close relationship between Black people and Jews and the history. To what extent does that history mean anything when it comes to the other end of that experience with, in this case, in terms of Black people dealing with the media industry, the music industry, and within hip hop? And how, in your experience, do people, individual Jews within the industry that I know you've had to work with, how much does that history play into how well they treat these artists, or how well they interact, or how fair they are with this other, as we're often encouraged to believe, in a similarly oppressed community?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I think everybody thinks they're fair. I think they, you know, and I hear that from Black folks too, man. You know, I hear that from Jigga and Russell, and, you know, talk about the wealth that rap music and hip hop's created for certain individuals. But they never want to talk about what happens, what pain and what brainwashed mentality that is caused to the masses. So, you know, if you sit down and you talk to Jimmy Iovine, he's going to talk about his philanthropy and how he made Dr. Dre rich and how he's done this for this artist and this artist. So I think in their mind, they've effectively blocked out, you know, the privilege that has been passed down and the partnership. And there's always a couple of dots along the way that they make rich. But, you know, I really don't think they even think it's a problem.
And there's an article from the L.A. Times, December 19th, 2008, by Joel Stein called How Jewish is Hollywood? And he basically goes through and explains that Hollywood is extremely Jewish, that he struggled to find anyone in leadership in Hollywood that was not a Jew, but then went on basically to make the point, somewhat, I think, is to what you were just saying, that that this was ultimately a good thing for American society, that without Jews playing such a prominent role, there would have the quality of the popular culture would be diminished. And certainly, I think this is the claim when it comes to what forms of music are selected to be made popular, and including within hip hop, that sort of that it has been it is a favor to us all that that these folks have come in and look to, you know, save us from what would be a low culture or worse popular culture were they not there. So then, by following that logic, if they are to be given credit for all that is good in popular culture, they too would have to take the blame for all that is bad, including this cycle of never-ending horrific images of black and brown people and what appears to be a never-ending, persistent, dominant, popular, and horrifically negative image that we get in most of commercial rap music. But to the particular issue raised by Stein, that ultimately Jewish involvement and control or ownership of dominant media or popular media is good. Is that somewhat similar to what you were just describing? Is that the sentiment?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if I was in control of things, I would think of it the same way. Like I'm doing goodness. And you know, we've seen this story play out with Hollywood and in film. And we've accepted that the role of people of color, you know, there's the butler, but Hollywood has been that way for generations now, and the music industry is the same way. And it's either you accept it or you learn how to, you know, select and program yourself around it.
Now, you mentioned briefly that you thought that there was more that we could do to resist these images that again, as I've argued, you know, and similar to you and many others, that are imposed on us. And this was Scarface's ultimate point, that through the power of ownership and copyright control and payola and plugola and, you know, the concentration of ownership within the entire media industry, you can't really become famous in popular culture without being selected by these handful of major corporations, which at really this point are really just three in the music industry, that UMG, Sony, and Warner Music, that determine all the popular rap and hip hop that we get. But you alluded at the beginning of our conversation to this idea that there was more that we could do to resist this. As we close, what are some of those things that you would suggest?
Well, I think, you know, what I've done personally, that I think you got to make folks aware that what the culture is and how it's, you know, determined and who selects it. You know, and until we start having larger discussions or one-on-ones, and I've been to tons of lectures and, you know, doing presentations, and that's why I formed RapRehab.com. I give some of the normal information that sucks them in, and then I give them, you know, drug pimps, you know, the Lipmans, Birdman, and Cash Money. They all run hand in hand, but when you look at it just by looking at the commercial world, you have no idea of what's going on. And unfortunately, commercial media is not going to talk about it. And that's why the numbers are so skewed in getting the message out there. You know, luckily the internet has enlightened some folks and, you know, these discussions happen. But once you learn it, you learn how to cut it out your system and stop being force-fed and brainwashing generations. But I don't think there's enough folks that even know something's wrong, and that's the scary point.
Paul Porter, RapRehab.com. Thank you again for joining us. We appreciate your work. We'll keep linking to it and looking to build. Thanks again.
All right, let's do it soon.
This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees podcast and I Mix What I Like.org.